The meeting of the Clinton Township Board of Education will now come to order. Time, Mr. Kilpatrick, please.
7:09 PM.
Thank you, sir. In accordance with the provisions of the New Jersey Open Public Meetings Act, Chapter 231, Laws of 1975, adequate notice of this meeting was provided through public notice on October 15, 2018, fastened to three newspapers designated by the board, the Hunter Democrat, Hunter Review, and Express Times. Posting on the district website, main bulletin board, in the administration offices, and in each Clinton Township school. And finally, faxing to the clerk of Clinton Township. Mr. Kilpatrick, may we please have a roll call, sir?
Yes. Ms. Grant?
Here.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Here.
Ms. Brennan?
Present.
Ms. Brooks?
Here.
Dr. Foy?
Here.
Mr. Holliday? Kevin Malloy?
Here.
Ms. Zalowski?
Here.
Ms. Radaguda?
Here.
Thank you, sir. Mrs. Brooks, would you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance this evening?
Pledge.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Malloy, would you serve as process guardian for this evening's meeting, sir?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Good evening. We have several recognitions this evening that the Board of Education would like to make. First, I'd like to start off with recognition of our principals. This month is National Principals Month in the United States, and the Clinton Township Board of Education would like to recognize our assistant principals, Mr. Tom Conley, Mr. Andrew Carefley, and our three principals, Mrs. Goad, Mrs. Postma, and Mrs. Hammond. We'd like to honor and recognize each and every one of you for your hard work and dedication to the children of Clinton Township, to our community, and to our staff. The key to student success in a great school, and the key to a great school, is a great principal and assistant principal. So thank you very much. Approximately 2 weeks ago, the Clinton Township Education Association elected new leadership to direct their organization for the 2018-19 school year. The full Board of Education would like to recognize and congratulate the following newly elected leaders. Ms. Kelly Hill and Ms. Mary Claire Spadone are the newly elected co-presidents of the CTEA. Congratulations to you both. Faith Furman is the vice president, building representative for Spruce Run and for Patrick McGarren, so congratulations. Ms. Rhonda Ferry serves as the vice president now and building representative for the Round Valley School, so congratulations, Ms. Ferry. And to Ms. Joanne Gitto, the vice president and building rep for the Clinton Township Middle School. Congratulations. And once again, on behalf of the board, I'd like to congratulate each and every one of you, and we really look forward to working with you, and that work has already started and begun. As you know, this past summer was a very busy one here in Clinton Township. Hello, Mr. Holliday. The May 31st recommendation and decision to move forward with the reorganization of our buildings in order to enhance the academic and co-curricular offerings that our students would receive while providing a savings of approximately $1 million required a lot of work, precision planning, and execution. The reorganization of the district would not have been a success if it were not for the dedication and loyalty of so many members of the Clinton Township staff. Michelle Cohn, our Acting Superintendent of Schools, Joanne Hinkle, Acting Director of Special Projects, our principals, assistant principals and supervisors, our maintenance and custodial staff, and our summer help, and Sue High, Director of Special Projects, AKA the District Classroom Fairy. They all worked exceptionally hard throughout the summer to ensure that the reorganization of the district went as smoothly as possible and that our classrooms and buildings were organized for the arrival of our staff and our students. The Board of Ed would like to thank all of them for their hard work this past summer. When the Board voted to accept the recommendation of the Superintendent of Schools to reorganize the district, it became very apparent to all that it was going to take a collaborative effort with everyone in the district to ensure that all four buildings would be clean, organized, and ready to welcome back the members of our staff and our children from the summer months. The Board would like to take a moment to recognize a very special group of people that went far above and beyond their given role and our expectations with their efforts to make sure that when our school doors open, they were ready. From their perspective, there was not one task or challenge that was viewed too big or too large for them to tackle. They were energetic and had continuous smiles on their faces no matter how big the task was or how hot it was in the building or how many obstacles got in the way of them achieving their goal. Not only did these folks have tasks to complete involving the reorganization, they had their normal expected summer work and responsibilities to accomplish to help prepare our facilities and grounds for the new school year. The following is just a short list of the numerous responsibilities, jobs, and tasks that they took head on and accomplished over the summer. The short list includes annual cleaning of all classrooms and hallways, stripping and waxing of all floors and hallways, HVAC filter replacements, plumbing repairs, water fountain repairs, roofing repairs, electrical repairs, generator maintenance, ceiling tile replacements, Airedale, and we learned how to say that and spell it backwards and forwards as a board, cleaning and servicing, cleaning of the HVAC coils, boiler cleaning and inspection, removal and installation of smart boards, the installation of AC units at both Patrick McGarren and Round Valley School, including metal fabrication to create space for units and electrical wiring and upgrades for each unit. And there were 12 total units. Also, internal classroom moves within each building, and there were 32. Lowering of whiteboards to accommodate the grade level of that was occupying that particular classroom. Lowering of soap dispensers, again, to accommodate the students at that particular grade level. The removal of coat racks, relocation of electrical outlets, and removal of power poles in classrooms. At this time, the Board of Education would like to acknowledge each of these special staff members individually for their hard work and dedication to the district and for making the reorganization a true success. When I call your name, please come up. Mr. John Alfano. Mr. Thomas Atanasio. Ms. Teresa Bostic. Mr. Dave Fields. Mr. Dan Gorman. Mr. Michael Hook. Mr. Willard Hoover. Okay, I know she's here. Marlene Kopak. Mr. Robert Lamoureux. Chris Lombardo. Mr. Robert Lovering. A special shout out to these two gentlemen, Mr. John Macusa and Mr. Joe Macusa. Mazuka, sorry. Sorry. These gentlemen installed air conditioners in how many classrooms?
Lost count.
Ms. Karen McCants. Mr. Cliff McCaffin. Janine McKinney. Thank you. Mr. Victor. Okay, Mr. Douglas Smith. Mr. Joseph Sudo. Thank you so much. And to our good friend who is retiring this year, Mr. Giuseppe Turco. You didn't miss anyone, right? Yeah, okay. All right, well, we're not done. The Board of Education would like to ask Ms. Therese Sue High to come forward, please.
No crying.
Okay.
All right, turn around.
We're going to start you off with this. So
okay, let's applaud for that. Ms. High, we have a special proclamation specifically for you as recognition for your very special role in the district's reorganization this summer. Don't read. Don't cheat. Oh, here are the bigger print. There we go.
I could never read.
No, you see, it's too small. Okay. See, that's why I had to do that. Okay. Proclamation, the Clinton Township School District Board of Education recognizing and honoring Therese Sue High. Whereas to successfully complete the reorganization of the Clinton Township School District took a great deal of hard work, precision, planning, and execution that you led. Whereas you fully and unselfishly dedicated yourself to the successful completion of the district's reorganization. Whereas you made personal sacrifice and commitment as an educational leader to foster the success of the district's reorganization. Whereas you individually unpacked and organized over 75 classrooms, district book rooms, supply rooms, offices, et al. Whereas you worked every weekday, I'll say it again, where you worked every weekday and weekend during the month of July and August to ensure the success of this reorganization. Whereas your work days were no less than 10 hours. Whereas your dedication to the staff and to the children of the Clinton Township School District saved taxpayers a great deal of money. Whereas you never complained or thought to ask or thought that a task was too big for you, whereas you set an example for others to follow. Therefore, let it be proclaimed from this day forward, Monday, October 22, 2018, that the Clinton Township Board of Education would like to commend and recognize you, Therese Suhai, for your extraordinary efforts and commitment to the district's reorganization process. And now, therefore, the Board of Education hereby proclaims the dedication of the main garden at the Round Valley School to be named the Therese Suhai Garden from this day forward. So if you know Ms. Hai very well, and when my children learned that we were going to do this, they said, well, you're going to have something in there that represents Ms. Hai, right? And I said, yes. And so further, let it be proclaimed that the garden theme will be based on frogs.
So do you mind moving it to the garden? Then you'll have to...
I was going to say, let Harry get a picture.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to get out.
Yeah, I'm going to get out. This is your photo.
Aww.
Wow. Perfect. Wow. You're all very good. Who knew about this? I'm very seldom speechless. I'm speechless. Totally unexpected. You don't know how this touches my heart, because this is something that I just love to do, which is gardening. So to see, to have my name here, so every October 22nd I can come.
You expected to weed the garden.
Okay, so you got that.
Thank you.
So glad to have you.
Thank you again. Two hugs, one night.
Thanks for all your
thank you so much. Okay, I'm not done.
I'll get you later.
That's funny.
We'll have to just work on it.
Yes. Yeah, I can't believe they found it. It's just amazing.
I'm done.
Yeah, right. Did you want the box of tissues or just the one you have?
I know where they are.
Okay.
Let's go.
Can you snap?
I can. I've got two. Oh boy, you got me in stereo here.
Thank you. I'd like to introduce Mr. David Nash. He will be giving our harassment, intimidation, and bullying training this evening for the Board of Education. Thank you, Mr. Nash.
You
you more. Thank you.
So thank you very much for the opportunity to be here and be here on such a special night. I want to lend my congratulations as well. What an incredible effort that you led over the last year and the entire team. It was such a moving night. So thank you for the opportunity to be here. I know, you know, on behalf of the New Jersey Principals and Supervisors Association, we are so proud as well of the great work that you have done. And it's just a wonderful example of leadership and a great team effort. So thank you for the chance to come and talk with you. I was asked to come give you sort of the latest information on New Jersey's anti-bullying Bill of Rights and understanding some important developments that the school district should be aware of as we move forward. Happy to have a chance to talk about those issues. Our anti-bullying Bill of Rights, as many of you know, is one of the strongest laws in the nation. It's one of the most comprehensive anti-bullying laws that we have anywhere in the country. And sometimes it's one of the more challenging laws to implement. So we recognize that as well. As I am speaking this evening, I'm happy to take any questions that you all may have. So please jump in as I go if there's any particular issue you want some more clarification on. I did want to talk briefly as part of this presentation about a couple of new statutes that our legislature has put into place that could potentially impact how we deal with bullying cases going forward. So I want to talk about those three important laws that we have in New Jersey, some new guidance, and our new regulations regarding bullying that are in effect as of July 1st. And those new regulations require adoption of some revised policies. So I want to make sure that you're comfortable with the major implications of those new regulations. Before I get to the regulations that I would like you to consider, there are a couple of new statutes I thought I would talk briefly about. So our legislature adopted a new law regarding the provision of recess for students at the elementary level. And this is relevant to our discussion this evening about bullying because the law envisions that we should not, as a general practice, have students removed from the opportunity to be part of recess as a punishment for having engaged in bullying behavior. So the legislature specifically said that moving forward, as of the 2019-20 school year, as of next school year, we will not be allowed to deny a student recess more than two times in any given week at the elementary level as a form of discipline or a consequence for a student having engaged in bullying behavior. If we do have a situation where perhaps that is going to be a consequence for a student, the school district will have to make sure that we're providing what's called restorative justice during that time period. So we need to make sure we provide a meaningful experience for the students, an opportunity for the student to reflect on their behavior, perhaps the choices that were made, different choices that could have been made, understanding the impact of that behavior, really critical things for elementary students to reflect on, so that hopefully we don't have established patterns that extend into middle school and high school. So I think it's an important law. Sort of a foundational part of this law is a requirement that every student at the elementary level must have access to recess. And I'm sure you provide this already, but it is a requirement moving forward as of next school year that every student grades K through 5 needs to have 20 minutes of recess each school day. And again, that we limit any denial of recess to no more than two times in any given week for a particular student. And if we have that denial, because of bullying or other conduct, we provide restorative justice activities. So this is an important school year to think through as a district what that restorative justice will look like, what sorts of policies and practices you want to put in place to make sure that we're still supporting kids at that level if we do have to impose that consequence. I would be happy if there's any questions on this particular statute that folks have before I touch on a couple of other issues.
So will there be a review of what we come up with a restorative justice list of what those options are?
So the New Jersey Department of Education is not planning to approve a list of restorative justice practices. We are hoping that sometime prior to the start of next school year, some additional guidance will be provided by the Department of Education so that we can have a fuller understanding of what the department views as appropriate options. There's no guarantee of that. We may or may not get that guidance. So I think whether or not we get that guidance from the state, it's important to start that discussion as a district now. What would meaningful restorative justice look like? And there is a great deal of research out there, and there are some wonderful programs in place in New Jersey and across the country that we can draw from. So I really wanted to just flag that issue as something that we should be having discussions about now so that we're prepared for September 2019 on that issue. I also wanted to talk a little bit about the issue of LGBTQ students, and in particular, transgender students. New Jersey has one of the strongest anti-discrimination laws in the country, and that anti-discrimination law includes protections for students based on gender identity and gender expression. It includes protection for students based on sexual orientation. There is an increased likelihood that students who are in the LGBTQ community may be targeted for bullying behavior. Research tells us that is true nationally, and we do see that to some extent in New Jersey. I will tell you, though, that for the most part, our students across the state of New Jersey have been incredibly supportive of their peers who happen to be members of the LGBTQ community. And that's something that we should all be very proud of. The great work that we've done in our educational system here in New Jersey has paid incredible dividends. We see students who feel emboldened to express who they are. They feel that school is a safe environment. And for the most part, students are not being targeted or bullied because of gender identity, sexual orientation. And it's been something that has been very encouraging. But we do see cases of students being bullied. There is an increased risk of suicidal ideation as well for this population. Nationally, the risk is 6 or 7 times higher, 6 to 7 times higher than we see for the overall student population. So the New Jersey Department of Education saw a need, and the legislature required that guidance be developed to help school districts understand how can we support this vulnerable and incredibly important population of students. So there were 4 legislative enactments within the past year. One required the Department of Education to develop guidelines on how we support all students. And I'll talk about that in a little bit of detail in a moment. There was also legislation that made it easier to have an amended birth certificate issued for a student. Prior to this year, it was virtually impossible for a student prior to age 18 and prior to having had surgery to get a new birth certificate that reflected the student's gender identity. We can get that now. If the student and the parent are on the same page and the parent wishes to petition for an amended birth certificate with a new gender marker, the state of New Jersey says we will provide that for parents moving forward. So that's an important step forward for kids and for families to recognize gender identity and expression. NJSIAA, the New Jersey State Interscholastic Athletic Association, has moved forward in their policies and is fully supportive of transgender students participating in athletics as well. So I think that's an important development. But I wanted to spend a little bit of time on the guidance that was put out by the state of New Jersey on this issue, because every school district now needs to look at adopting policies that are in line with this guidance in order to make sure that all students are fully protected. So the guidance, we include a link to it in our PowerPoint. You can see the full document from the New Jersey Department of Education. It includes specific definitions, and I like to compare it to learning a new language. It's easier for kids to learn than adults when we talk about learning a new language. And for many of our students, the terminology that we see in this guidance is second nature. And they are very comfortable with it and have learned it from a very young age. Some of our adults are struggling with this new language, but it's critical that we adopt policies that reflect the definitions we see in the state guidance, and that we train all of our staff during this school year to make sure that everybody fully understands that terminology. There's important guidance on student gender identity. We have to struggle with this issue sometimes within individual families. This is a very difficult concept. It's a very difficult issue for us to fully come to grips with. Sometimes parents struggle with this issue. The New Jersey Department of Education recognizes that. So the Department of Education has said that your local policies should be governed by what's in the best interest of the child when it comes to how we communicate with the student and their parents. And the guidance says there may be times where a student confides in school officials that student's gender identity, and we don't immediately pick up the phone and contact the parents regarding that issue. That will be a case-by-case analysis to figure out what is in the best interest of a child in a particular case. So it might be a process to try to help the student have that discussion with their parents, and it may not happen immediately.
You're saying that the school has the authority to decide the child's best course in advance of the parents?
The school has to decide, has the authority to assess what is in the best interest of the child.
I think that's ridiculous. You're telling me the school overrides a parent's right to help their children as they see fit.
That's not the way the Department of Education has couched this guidance. What they have said is that we have cases where parents are struggling with this issue, and in the short term, it could potentially cause more harm.
Is this law or guidance?
It's the department's interpretation of state law.
Is it law or guidance?
Well, we'll know when we have a case. New Jersey Department of Education says it's New Jersey law. It is their interpretation of the New Jersey law against discrimination. We don't yet have a case.
So the State Department of Education, the governor, say it's law, or I think it's law, let's have a case adjudicated to prove it's law?
No, they're saying this is our guidance about the way to properly implement existing law.
And we should abide by that. If parents have the equation, if we, not the parents of the student, think it's in their better interest?
It's a difficult question, right? It's a very difficult question.
It's a tremendous overreach, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's a tremendous overreach. Mm-hmm. I would advise the board not to adopt it.
Yeah. No, I understand. I understand the concern.
We're not parents. We're not.
What we see in the research is that this population is up to 7 times greater to attempt or commit suicide. And the research says that a portion of the reason for that is family rejection. So this is a population that is at incredibly high risk. In the vast majority of cases, the parents are completely supportive of that child and it completely makes sense. We're going to have a small number of cases where the risk to the child is heightened by the immediate sharing of that information.
Is it a fair statement that this is probably more of an issue in secondary and high schools as opposed to K districts?
I don't think so. Because the research also says that students recognize their gender identity at a very young age.
The research? Okay.
So even at the elementary level, starting, we have kindergarten students who are asserting gender identity, young elementary students who are asserting gender identity. So it's not just a high school issue. Now, of course, it's up to the school district to decide what we do with this guidance. My only role here today is making you aware of it. And the guidance that's been issued by the Department of Education. And there is a requirement to adopt a policy on this issue. So we're going to have to at least look at that guidance, discuss it, and determine what your policy will be on this issue. So the policy addresses students' gender identity, working with the student, working with the parents. It discusses the use of name and pronoun. Even if a student has not had a legal name change, This guidance says if a student is asking to be referred to by a specific name and to be referred to by a specific gender, we are supposed to honor that request of that student. And for every purpose that the student understands when they're interacting with staff members, we should be honoring that name and that gender identity of that student. The guidance says that the student is entitled, and this is clear in the statute, that the student is entitled to access locker rooms and restrooms based on that student's gender identity. If that student wants a private changing area, we're supposed to provide that. If other students want a private changing area, we're supposed to provide that for them as well, to make sure that any student feels comfortable. If they need a private area for a bathroom, if they need a private area for locker rooms for our older students. As far as student records, we should be maintaining the official student records with the student's legal name if the name has not changed, but there should be a separate record that we are providing to staff members that includes the student's asserted gender identity and requested name that they be referred to as. So this is a major change in practice, and we do want to make sure that this is on your radar screen. The department is expecting districts to look at this guidance and to adopt a local policy that addresses these issues. And you may already have one. I didn't check in advance whether or not there was an existing policy on these issues. Questions at all? Additional questions, Ms.? Yes.
Is that a precedent for state law?
It does not, because separate and apart from federal law, the New Jersey law against discrimination has specifically identified gender identity and gender expression as a protected class, and states are always permitted to provide additional protections and recognize additional classes, whether or not they're covered under federal law. So that's a critical issue for many states. It's not really a critical issue in New Jersey, looking at that federal interpretation. But good question. Other questions on that? All right. Another issue that could potentially impact bullying claims that I want you to be aware of. Our legislature has adopted a new set of requirements if we ever have to physically restrain a student and that student has an IEP. Very challenging law to implement. Very well intentioned, and the idea is that we should be thoughtful about the use of physical restraint. We should make sure that folks who are engaging in physical restraint are properly trained. We do have a more vulnerable population when it comes to students with disabilities who could potentially be harmed by improper use of restraint. So completely understandable why the legislature wanted to address the issue. I will say that the statute that was put in place is going to be a very challenging one to properly implement. So the statute limits the use of physical restraint for students with IEPs to only emergency situations. And the definition of restraint is incredibly broad. So one student is engaged in a fight with a second student. We have many great staff members who will oftentimes step in, separate the students. New Jersey's definition of restraint would categorize that action of separating a student and pulling one student off of another student as a form of restraint. That would satisfy the restraint statute. So it's certainly permissible to do. In many cases, it's necessary to do. But the state is saying that the person doing it should have had restraint training on an annual basis. If the student who's being touched by the staff member is a student with an IEP.
Is the state giving guidance on what to do in that event when someone with restraint training isn't around? We've got middle school kids here punching and hitting each other. If that happens, we're supposed to just let it happen until we get someone with restraint training to come and break it up.
What the state is basically saying through this law.
Has the state ever seen a fight between two people?
I know. I wouldn't have enacted the statute either. I want you to be aware of it. What the impact of this is, frankly, is that we need to look to move towards training all of our staff on physical restraint. Because you never know where an issue could occur. It could happen anywhere.
I assume they'll get grant money for
self-training? I wish they would. As a state association, we have lobbied for that, and we've raised all these concerns as well.
It's not, this is a short
Yeah, I understand. So the law's in place. It's a challenging law. We don't know where this situation could occur.
But the restraint is directly for students with individual education plans, correct?
Yes.
Not for students who don't have IEPs.
That's right. So now the challenge, of course, is that we haven't memorized. We don't know.
Should we put buttons on and say?
Which obviously we can't. We can't do that. Students have confidentiality rights. We can't advertise which students have disabilities. So the practical impact is that we need to train, I think, virtually all of our staff on physical restraint. I'm not sure how else to properly implement this law. Well, you can, but in the meantime, in the meantime, we have a statute on the books. So if this happens, just a couple quick points. A staff member would have to be trained annually on physical restraint to satisfy the requirement. If the student has to be restrained, the parent needs to be immediately notified. And there needs to be a detailed written notice to the parent within 48 hours. That detailed written notice has to be in sufficient detail to be used at the next IEP meeting to discuss the behavioral intervention plan for that child. That's a significant level of detail. In a very short window of time, something happens on a Friday afternoon, by Sunday afternoon, that parent is supposed to have a detailed written report that explains what happened. So it's not two school days, it's 48 hours for that information to be shared. Part of my concern is that we may have allegations that staff members are bullying children if they have to restrain those children and they haven't had proper restraint training. This could create the potential for litigation along those lines. So I want this to be on your radar screen, and it's going to be a very difficult law for all districts in the state to implement, but we need to look at it and to have those discussions about how to practically make this work. Questions at all? I do entire days just on that one statute, but I'm happy to answer any additional questions that you might have. In the back? No, not at all. The challenge is for the district. If a staff member has not been trained and they see a student being harmed, our staff members are very caring, and your staff members are very caring, and they may choose to step in order to protect the child. That will still be a reasonable decision for the individual staff member. The challenge is for the district. The district will need to answer for why we didn't train a sufficient number of staff members so that somebody with proper training was available. And as I said, the only practical way to do that, I think, is to train everybody. That's the real world impact of this legislation, because we have no idea where an issue might occur.
Excuse me, what about a second?
I'm sure, okay.
Let's go forward and ask questions.
I'm sorry, I apologize. So let me move forward with reviewing the new regulations that were adopted and went into effect as of July 1st. Some key points, and every district now needs to revise its policy regarding the Anti-Bullying Bill of Rights. And there are some policy decisions that we need to make. So one provision in the new regulation says that the local district has an option to change its local policy. If you choose to exercise that option in local policy, the principal would have the authority to consult with the anti-bullying specialist and determine whether or not we need to move forward with a formal HIB investigation of a particular allegation, or whether the issue can be addressed under the Code of Student Conduct. So sometimes we'll have a misunderstanding regarding the Anti-Bullying Bill of Rights. You might have a student who uses the word bullying, and then they describe exactly what happened, and the description that they give to the teacher or to the principal makes it very clear this is a mutual conflict and does not meet the definition of bullying under the Anti-Bullying Bill of Rights. Or you might have a situation where there's a legitimate concern. So for example, a student has not been invited to a birthday party, student is upset about that, but that's the entirety of the allegation, and there is no allegation that the student has been ostracized because of any characteristic, so it doesn't meet the bullying definition. In cases like that, if you had decided to exercise this local option, the principal, in consultation with the anti-bullying specialist, could decide to address the issue without having to go through the formal HIV investigation process. So this is a an option that, as a state association, NJPSA did support it. And we do think it's a good common sense way to address issues that clearly don't meet the bullying definition. And of course, if new information were to come out a day, a week, or a month later that led the principal to believe this could be a bullying issue at any point in time, a bullying investigation could be opened. If this option were adopted, the parents would have to be informed of this decision as well, that there was a potential allegation of bullying, that the principal consulted with the anti-bullying specialist, made this initial threshold assessment. So of course the parent would have a right to contest that decision, just like any other decision regarding student discipline, and could potentially come to the Board of Education and say, I disagree, there should be a bullying investigation. So parent rights are preserved in this, parent notice is preserved in this, but it does provide, I think, a sensible option in some cases to, in a common sense way, address issues without having to do the formal HIV investigation. Questions on that particular provision? And that would require a local policy that your board would have to adopt. If you were to adopt that policy, there would be standards. The decision would have to be made based on a threshold assessment. We would assume that the allegation is true as far as any particular facts. And the question we would ask is, assuming this allegation is completely true, would it be bullying? That's the question that we would be asking. When you do the investigation, you figure out whether or not the allegation is actually true, but at that initial stage, you give the benefit of the doubt to whoever is making the allegation and just ask that common sense set of questions, would this be bullying or not? Assuming it's true. So there will be criteria for this. We suggest that if you do choose to adopt this policy option, you go above and beyond what the state is requiring, and you make sure the anti-bullying coordinator and superintendent are also aware of any decision that's made along these lines. And of course, if the anti-bullying coordinator or superintendent feel differently, then the district should move forward with the investigation. So it's an additional safety net that you could build into this to make sure that nothing ever falls through the cracks, but still allows for some common sense initial assessments to be made. So that's an important policy option that you will need to make a decision on if you want to allow that option or not. Question?
What would the advantage of a district moving to this policy be?
The advantage of adopting this policy? It could allow for a much more efficient use of limited resources that we have. So if we adopt this policy, we could, in a very efficient way, address some issues that are run-of-the-mill student conflict, and principals have great training in addressing those issues every day. And those issues could be addressed, could be fully resolved. Parents would still be contacted about those issues. And it might be a much more efficient way to use our limited resources rather than doing all the paperwork that goes with the formal HIV investigation in those cases. It should only be used for the cases that clearly don't meet the bullying definition. So it wouldn't in any way limit proper investigations. So I'm not sure what percentage of investigations would go down. Maybe it's 10%, but it would be some reasonable reduction, but the issues would still be fully addressed. So I do think it's a reasonable option. It's not something that you need to do, but we think it's a reasonable option to consider. This change in regulation is something that you are required to address. This is another change that we did not support. We frankly lobbied against, but it was adopted by the State Board of Education. So this change says that if you have a student who you pay tuition for and send to an approved private school for students with disabilities, if that student is allegedly bullied, but it doesn't happen in the private school, it happens on the bus, or it happens over the weekend, over social media, or anywhere else other than the approved private school, the sending district of the alleged victim is now the lead investigator. You have to send somebody out from your district to the approved private school to do that investigation. Very challenging to implement this as well. In many cases, those students don't know you. They know the people from the approved private school. That's who they interact with on a daily basis. So this is going to be a difficult provision to implement. It is required, though, at this point in time. And I have to tell you that I've done training on this issue across the state, and I've asked districts about this, and there have been very few districts that have been notified by approved private schools about potential bullying issues. And that raises a real concern for me that potentially our approved private schools are not telling the sending districts what is happening. We need to make sure that they are making you aware of these issues. You can't investigate something if you're never told about it. So it's critical that we have that discussion with any approved private school that you're sending students to so they understand this process and that you're able to do that investigation. If you are notified by an approved private school, the district will have to send an anti-bullying specialist that you decide whoever that person is going to be out to the approved private school. What I would do as a best practice is require appropriate personnel from the approved private school to be there with you. They're the ones who know the children. They should be there with you while you're interviewing the students. It should be done together. It'll be a much more comforting, comfortable process for the child if they have an adult they recognize who's part of that interview process. So I would still make sure that the approved private school is working in concert with you on those issues. Again, another challenging regulation, but it is something we are required to do moving forward. Any questions on that particular provision? Say that again, I'm sorry. There is a requirement. So the private schools are required to report these issues to the sending district. And my anecdotal concern is that it seems like perhaps not all approved private schools are doing that. But it's clearly required under state law that that information must be reported to the sending district. So it's worth having a discussion with the approved private schools to make sure everybody understands their responsibilities. A third change in the regulations that I want you to be aware of is a requirement to do what you're probably doing in just about all of your cases already, but now it's formalized, taking into account the circumstances of an incident when contacting the parents. So a student may have been singled out because of, for example, sexual orientation. And potentially is being bullied because of sexual orientation. The parents have a right to know that student is potentially being bullied. The student has not told his or her parents about his actual sexual orientation at this point in time. This guidance says that we should consider that issue, and as one suggestion, the school district could contact the parents and indicate to the parents that the student has been singled out because of perceived sexual orientation or gender identity. And there is not a requirement to automatically disclose that the student has told school officials the student's actual sexual orientation or gender identity as part of that bullying claim. So that approach can work on some issues, it won't work on all issues, right? If a student is being singled out because a student, for example, is dating somebody of a different race or ethnicity, it would be difficult to call the parent and say the student's being singled out because they're perceived to be dating somebody of a different race or ethnicity. So we're going to have to just think through how to have conversations, and districts do this all the time, how to have complicated conversations with a family about difficult issues. The key to this regulation is that it requires us to formalize that process. We are required to talk to the student first before we call the parents and to understand if the student has any concerns about the information that will be shared with the parent and to think through how to have that discussion in light of any concerns that are being raised. So it sort of slows the process down a little bit to make sure we fully understand the situation before making that phone call. A couple other changes are simpler. Timeline for parent appeals. Parent asks for a hearing before the Board of Education. We have to grant that hearing. The regulation says that you have 10 school days to give a parent a hearing before the board if they disagree with the finding regarding a bullying investigation. And that's parents on either side of the equation could disagree with the finding. So regulation says 10 school days. The statute actually says 10 calendar days. And we did have a district get themselves in trouble for relying on the regulation and not the statute. So this is a regulation that is actually incorrect. The state board adopted a regulation that's inconsistent with state law. So if you do get a request from a parent, you want to make sure you grant that hearing before the board actually within 10 calendar days. The parent has a 60-day window to ask for the hearing. Once the parent is informed of the outcome of an investigation, there is a 60-day window for the parent to ask for a hearing before the Board of Education. As long as the request comes within that 60-day window, you have 10 days to actually hold the hearing from whenever the parent makes the request. And that request could come before or after you have voted to affirm, reject, or modify a particular decision, as long as it's within that 60-day window. Another change in regulation talks about school safety teams. So the terminology has been changed. It used to be called school safety team. Now it's called school safety / climate team. And the team is required to address larger issues of school climate, as well as looking at particular bullying cases. The revised regulation reminds districts that members of that school safety / climate team are getting confidential information, and they have to make sure they're not inadvertently sharing that with their colleagues in the school. So it's just important for us to address that with the teams on an annual basis and remind everybody of their responsibility to maintain confidential information. There's another requirement in this new regulation to change your local district policy. This requirement says that every district's local policy has to say that bullying is unwanted aggressive behavior that may involve a real or perceived power imbalance. So that's new language that you may not have in your existing policy regarding bullying, but has to be in your policy moving forward. Research actually tells us that bullying always involves a power imbalance. This language is a little bit softer than that. It says it may involve a real or perceived power imbalance. So you want to make sure that's reflected in your language. Conflict of interest, you want to have a clear procedure if there is an allegation of bullying against a staff member in the district. So the state of New Jersey has recognized that an anti-bullying specialist should not be investigating somebody who is in the same bargaining unit that they are in. That would be a conflict of interest. Oftentimes the anti-bullying specialist is a school counselor. They would generally be in the same bargaining unit as a teacher who might be accused of bullying. So we would have to have somebody who's not in that bargaining unit, typically a school administrator, who would do that investigation if there was an allegation against a teacher or another staff member. If there was an allegation against a principal or an administrator, it's never good for an anti-bullying specialist to be investigating their boss. That's not great for anybody's job security moving forward. So you always want somebody at a higher level doing that investigation if we ever had administrative personnel who were the subject of an allegation of bullying. So I think that, it really is a common sense provision, but now it is required to be in your protocol. Students with disabilities. New regulation says that whenever we're going to impose a consequence for a student with a disability who may have engaged in harassment, intimidation, or bullying, we have to first consider that student's disability and think through what response makes sense for this particular child. So, for example, you have a student with Tourette's syndrome. The student, as a manifestation of that disability, says something that is hurtful to another student. It probably doesn't make sense to suspend that student whose behavior is a manifestation of their disability. And this regulation says, slow down, think through what response will make sense. What the state of New Jersey says is that we have to respond to every incident of bullying. We don't necessarily have to punish. There has to be a response, and we should be guided by what will hopefully change behavior moving forward. So that might be very different for a student with a disability. In some ways, it's requiring something akin to a manifestation determination, even for the very first day that we're looking to impose discipline. So we should at least slow down, have the case manager involved, and think through what response would make a difference for that particular child. It's something of an extension of the requirements and protections we have under federal law. Remember, prior guidance from the U.S. Department of Education says that if we have a student with a disability who is the victim of bullying, we are expected to convene the IEP team for that student and make sure that we're considering whether or not the IEP needs to be revised in any way. The student may have been so traumatized by the bullying incident that the educational strategies that worked before may not be effective now. So that's kind of a safety net to make sure we're fully considering what we need to do to support every child. And that's guidance that came out from the U.S. Department of Education in 2014 that's still in effect as we speak today. We have seen a number of cases across the country and some in New Jersey where students who have been a victim of bullying, that bullying has been so severe that it resulted in a denial of FAPE, in the denial of a free appropriate public education for that student. So issues of bullying for our most vulnerable population can become incredibly serious, and school districts need to consider the impact on the IEP, the impact on FAPE, the impact on that student being in the least restrictive environment. We also want to broadly consider what information we share with school officials. So for example, a student with a disability may have been bullied. Perhaps the student's coach, the student is involved in athletics, perhaps the coach would need some information regarding that. The student might not be behaving the way he was before as part of that team. If the coach had some information, he or she might be more understanding of that student and how they're reacting in practice or as part of that team moving forward. So we want to think more broadly about who we share information with in the best interest of the child. A couple of quick scenarios to make sure that, I want to make sure that we fully understand how we implement these regulations moving forward. So here's a simple example of a student, Johnny, who has falsely accused Billy of bullying on four separate occasions in seventh grade. The district properly investigated every one of those issues. All the witnesses that were called all said it didn't happen. So the district concluded four different times in seventh grade that there was no bullying. Now it's eighth grade. Let's assume we've adopted that local policy option that I talked about, where the principal has the option to assess the situation with the anti-bullying specialist. And now there's a new allegation from Johnny that Billy has been bullying him. Even with this new policy, you would still have to do that investigation if what Johnny is saying would be bullying. So in order to answer this particular scenario, you have to see what the allegation is. But we still would give Johnny the benefit of the doubt, even if he has made allegations that weren't true in the prior year, or several allegations that weren't true in the prior year. So I want to show this example to make sure that we don't misuse that discretion if you decide to allow the principal to have that discretion to make that initial threshold assessment. We always give the benefit of the doubt to whoever is making the allegation and assume the allegation is true at that initial stage. Another example of a scenario to make sure we understand the new regulations. We have Brenda, an 11th grade student who's bused to an approved private school for students with disabilities. Monday morning, she complains to her case manager that horrible things were said to her when she came into school that morning. If the scenario ended there, the approved private school would do the investigation of that situation. But we see in this scenario that there are rumors that the whole issue started over the weekend with some things that were posted online. Because of that rumor, it now becomes the sending district of the alleged victim that leads the investigation, because the incident might have started over the weekend before the student was physically in school. So I'd want you to see how broadly this is going to be viewed when it comes to the sending district having to lead that investigation. One other scenario, Chase, a second grade student, he's close friends with Jazz, a transgender girl in his class. They were good friends in kindergarten and first grade when Jazz had identified as Jeremy. Now Jazz has asserted her gender identity as female. Chase remained close with Jazz. They're talking one day, they're walking down the hall. Jazz has to go to the bathroom. She walks into the girls' room. Chase is talking to her. He just keeps walking, and he walks into the girls' room, too, and they keep talking. He walks out of the girls' room. Some boys see him walk out of the girls' room, and they start chanting, "Chase is a girl." Not a simple scenario. Part of the legal issue that you would have to think through is, what do we expect a second grader to understand? A second grader might be confused about a boy walking out of the girls' room. So we would have to consider whether or not the second grader should have known that chanting that would cause harm for Chase. Not an easy issue. It becomes more complicated because in this particular scenario, Chase admits to the teacher that he wishes his parents were as cool as Jazz's parents. He tells the teacher that he's really a girl too and would wear girl clothes like Jazz if he was allowed to, but his dad would kill him, so he knows he can't. Now we have a scenario that's become very complicated. Now we potentially have to do some risk assessment to understand whether or not there is a concern about the situation in the home. We have to consider how we're going to communicate with the parent and how and when we're going to share that information that Chase has just disclosed to the school official about potential gender identity and that fear that dad's going to kill him if that information is shared. So these are not easy questions, and I wanted to kind of bring this to your attention because we can have and have had bullying cases like this in New Jersey and across the country, and the regulations say we need to slow down and think through how we're going to address those difficult issues. So I've tried to cover a lot of ground quickly with you guys. I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have about the Anti-Bullying Bill of Rights and our implementation. Presentation we did provide to the district, so I'm sure it is going to be made available electronically. Absolutely. Other questions? Thank you all very much. It's always great to have a chance to come and talk with you.